Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. Hey, it's Dr. Ray Hynes joined here with Blythe Wagner. Hey, Blythe, what's going down?
Hey, Dr. Ray. Not a lot going down. You know, life as usual. Things are great. How about for you?
Everything's great on my side, too. Now, I will say this. So yesterday, Blythe, I came home after a pretty hard jiu-jitsu workout, okay? So we were, you know, it was a good long class, a lot of what we call rolling, where you're just trying to beat each other up and tap each other out. So I come in and I'm like, okay, I'm hungry. Look around, nothing much to eat in the house. Mm-hmm. So I end up making two hot dogs. So I sit on my recliner, I eat the two hot dogs, I get up, you know, I'm like, geez, I'm still hungry, man. What's going on here? So I get up and I go into the kitchen. My father-in-law that morning had brought in some honey buns. And because he likes to, you know how grandparents are. They just want to stuff food down your child's mouth. And so I was like, all right, I'll grab a honey bun. Go eat a honey bun. Okay. And then I finish the honey bun. I'm like, you know what? That was amazing. That was a piece
of
heaven.
Good. Yeah.
And so I go back in the kitchen and I grab another honey bun and I eat that, okay? And I'm sitting in the chair. I just finished two hot dogs and two honey buns. And I'm thinking, what the heck just happened? Like, what just happened? And, you know, it wasn't, you know, I'm way past that whole, you know, arena of guilt, where guilt and shame that a lot of people resort to. So it wasn't like I was beating myself up. I was truly, honestly curious about how it got to the point where, you know, we've all had those moments where we make the decision to really be solid on our lifestyle, and we wake up face down in an empty pizza box, having no idea how the heck we got there, right?
Yeah, I have those moments too, you know, and it just so happened to be last night, and I don't know why. I love to go to, we've got a local natural grocery store right here on the corner, and they sell these tubs of these tiny little bite-sized cookies. They're smaller than animal crackers, and they're, you know, organic and natural and, you know, all of these things. So it makes you feel better about eating these. Well, it comes in a tub. It doesn't come in like pre-portion sizes. Mm. So yeah. By the time I realized, I was like, you know, an eighth of the tub. And I'm talking a tub. Okay, this is the size. It's a gallon tub. It's a gallon tub. This is no small tub I'm talking about. I was like an eighth of the way through that. And I was like, wait a second. I was dipping it in my tea. And then they're just little bite size. So we all have these moments. And, you know, it's important. And I'm past the guilt and shame. But I was like, how did I get an eighth of the way through that entire container before I even noticed what I was doing? Crazy.
Right. It is crazy. And so, you know, as I was kind of going through my mind, I'm like, okay, let's dissect, you know, what ultimately led up to this big, you know, engorgement of junk food. And I was like, okay, so number one, I didn't sleep well last night because my 5-year-old daughter woke up in the middle of the night. And so I took her into the bed, and she does cartwheels while she sleeps.
Oh,
it's amazing.
I have one of those too.
I woke up with her foot in my mouth. And I'm not even exaggerating. Her whole foot was in my mouth. And I was like, what's going on? So, you know, I didn't sleep well that night. I woke up, you know, probably on 5 hours of sleep, which we know ultimately does cause insulin resistance even that quickly. Even after just one night of not sleeping well, you end up with insulin resistance. So I started my day like that. Number two, I come into the office and I didn't realize that my core management staff was off on vacation in Jamaica. And I'm like, they went on vacation? I didn't even know this. So I'm like, so there was a lot of stress that was involved with, you know, keeping up with that. And then I come home and I do a jiu-jitsu workout. And just for kicks, I was like, you know, as I was sitting there debriefing myself on what happened, I was like, let me just go online and see how many calories I burned in that one jiu-jitsu workout. And it amounted to about 800 calories, in one workout. And so that then is again, and we're going to talk about that in today's podcast episode, worked against me as well. And then we're selling our house. So we were listing it that day, and we knew that the next day and then this weekend we had to do the open house. So all that kind of culminated in this moment of just, of willpower weakness that ultimately probably led to, the engorgement of junk food, right?
Yeah, the hot dog honey bun episode.
As it shall hereforth be known, the hot dog honey bun episode. And so, you know, not to say that that's an excuse for living out of integrity with our intention, but it is a way of looking back on things and saying that's why this happened, so that we can learn and make tweaks and changes in the future to make it less likely that that's going to happen again.
Right. Yes. And your plate is clearly very full right now. And those type of stresses lead up to sometimes subconscious decisions being made that result in eating like this. And that's kind of what happened to me too. I had forgotten to eat. And then I sat down, had dinner. I was like, well, I'm still not full. So that's when I started eating those little chocolate chip cookies. So yes, I did the same thing. I reflected back on the day. Why on earth? Like, I don't even really think I need those calories. And I looked back and, oh yeah, I had my shake. And then I didn't eat another meal after that. So I was definitely calorie deficient. And then, of course, you know, eating those cookies didn't help me in the long run, but it's good for reflection and remembering not to do that tomorrow.
Right. And we didn't even mention the topic of today's podcast episode, which is female fat loss workout plan. That's what we're talking about. How do we build a workout plan that is more attuned and focused towards the female metabolism? And we talked in the last podcast about all the ways, well, at least a lot of ways in which the female metabolism is different from that of men. And today we're going to talk more about the female fat loss workout plan moving forward.
How we can use your hormones to your advantage.
Right. And so this discussion is really going to come into play. And we'll get into that in just a minute. But there are just two points I want to point out just on this little intro that we had, this improvisational intro. And that is, number one, it's very easy to end up in the land of shame and guilt after an episode like this. And I want you guys to really resist that tendency, because number one, it doesn't serve you in any way whatsoever. We think it does. We think that if we shame and guilt ourselves enough, that we'll be less likely to do the thing that we don't want to do in the future. But that's just not how it works, because, I mean, for many reasons, you have a tendency to get what you think about and focus on. So if you're focusing on not doing something, not eating something, you have a tendency to end up eating that thing. And the way that's been explained to me from the perspective of your subconscious mind, which drives the shows we'll talk about when we get into discussion on what we call the compensatory engine. The thing about your subconscious mind is it doesn't hear negatives. So if you say, I won't eat cake, your subconscious mind erases the negative and just hears the rest of the sentence. So it says,
cake,
instead of
cake,
I won't cake. Eat cake, I eat cake is what it hears. Yeah, I won't eat pizza, I eat pizza. And so if you think of it in terms like that, then we start to shift our mindset into what we want, thinking about what we want rather than what we don't want. So that's number one, is stay out of that realm of guilt and shame. I know a lot of you go there. I know it's tough not to, but think in terms of how can I use this experience to make myself better.
Right. I tend to think that same thing, but you said taking the negative out, so the word won't. So if we focus so much on what we don't want to do, we're actually focusing more on it by trying not to do it. So it's almost like hitting an echo button. Like, if you think, okay, I don't want to eat pizza, it's pizza, 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 pizza. Right. Like, it's kind of like being pounded into your brain. So the less you think about the guilt maybe that you have from doing that, then maybe the less that echo button will be hit.
Right. And another way of describing it is, in order for your mind to grasp not doing something. It has to imagine you doing it. So yes. If I say, don't break the china, your mind has to imagine breaking the china in order to be able to grasp the concept of not breaking the china.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, all this stuff is just, you know, can sound somewhat woo-woo to people, but it is a real thing that happens in our mindset. And it's been pretty much proven in the research literature that this is how our mind works. So focus a lot on what you want. And so this brings me to the second point, which, you know, we talked about all of the reasons why ultimately I ended up in this kind of, what did we call it? The hot dog honey bun episode.
Hot dog honey bun episode.
And let's talk about the cookie episode that happened with you.
Okay.
So there were definitely things that ultimately you said you skipped a meal.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize it. So by the time I had sat down and had dinner, I was like, well, I just don't feel satiated. And I'm a busy person. I got in like 14,000 steps or something funny yesterday. And I was like, wow, no wonder I'm hungry. You know, so, and that's kind of where I ended the thought. Wow, no wonder.
If you just, you know, ate that you know, an eighth of that tub of cookies and you just said, oh, I suck. I'm the worst. Why did I do this to myself? Then guess what happens? You don't get into solution mode. You don't change anything about your life because you've come to the conclusion that the reason you ate those cookies is because you are a bad person, because you are a loser. You are you have no willpower, no self-control. So the answer that your mind gets to why did I eat these cookies is I'm a loser. Instead, if we focus on, well, what were the circumstances that led up to this, then we can say, okay, let's take a look at what happened. I missed a meal, didn't realize it, so I'll be more conscious of that in the future. Number two, you know, we've talked about this when we talked about the mindfulness eating concept, mm-hmm. is that, or the, you know, we could say just the mindless component of the mindfulness eating episode, was that, you know, we think we're doing ourselves good by going to like BJ's and buying the massive containers of food. It saves us money, right? At least we think it does. But the food scientists have discovered that it very often does not save us money, because we get that tub out and we simply eat more than we would
eat more
had we bought a smaller tub. And that's been proven in the research literature that that's exactly what we do. And it happens not just with food, not just with things like buying the massive container of pasta. We actually end up putting more pasta in the water and eating more pasta than we would if we had bought it in smaller containers. But it also happens with our shampoo. We think if we're buying large bottles of shampoo, we're going to save money. But what the researchers found was that this thing that happens with food also happens with other things like shampoo. We buy a big container, we use more shampoo.
Okay, I have to say this, because before we podcasted, I went to the gym and I hopped in the shower and I put a huge old glob of shampoo in my hand today. And I was like, we've got plenty. That was literally, I just had that thought like an hour and a half ago. Like, you know, it's a huge tub, we're fine. And normally I would be a little more frugal. So you're right. And not that I don't believe, you know, the scientific studies, but it's happening in front of my face and I just need to be a little more, you know, cognizant of that.
Right. And so the take home message is that, you know, as it, you know, we say that as you do weight loss, you do everything, right?
Yeah. Yes.
The way you do weight loss is the way you do everything. And so in this system, this is a mechanism that's built into the brain that applies in food and other things, because the mechanism is, you know, when we see more, we use more. And so that's something to really keep in mind as we move forward in this discussion. Okay.
Good little golden nugget to start with. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what happened to me is what happened to me, you know, with hot dog honey bun episode was what we call the compensatory engine. Okay.
Yes.
And so, you know, what's your understanding of the compensatory engine?
So when there's an abrupt drop in calories, whether it's through exercise or just like not eating, dieting, the compensatory engine gets to work to kind of compensate for the loss in fuel So loss in fuel from not eating or loss in fuel from lots of exercise by making you feel hungry. It stimulates cravings. It decreases your energy levels and you feel like you need to eat. That is the compensatory engine explanation.
Right. And so it's very much a subconscious process. And what we know is that the subconscious process kind of takes precedence over the conscious process. So this is why we should never be feel guilty or shameful for when these events happen, because it really is controlled by a different mechanism within the brain that supersedes our conscious thoughts. So we say, I want to lose weight, but then we end up in an attempt to do ourselves good, we starve ourselves or we go running on a treadmill to burn 1,200 calories and, you know, a night. And we wonder why we're always hungry, always craving, and always feel like sitting on a couch. It's because of this natural mechanism that's built in to our brain and works against our desire to burn fat. Your body doesn't want you to burn fat. It wants to keep you at least a little bit fat, right? That's just how the metabolism works as a means of protecting you from starvation.
Right. So the conscious brain is the one that is working while we're awake. So we wake up early in the morning and we think, today is the day. I am going to not eat any sugar. I'm going to run 3 miles on the treadmill. I'm going to make all these great choices. And you're just going to basically white knuckle your way through the day, through the environment that you've always been surrounded by that sometimes fails you. But this is the conscious brain, right? This is our intention.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And it tires very easily.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons why, you know, that white knuckling part of the brain, the conscious brain, it can get you through a day. It can even get you through a week. It might even get you through a few weeks. But eventually you're going to give in to the constant pressure of the subconscious brain, which is why when we build our exercise program, we have to keep in mind this compensatory engine in order to be successful, because the compensatory engine wins over our white knuckling, you know, part of our brain, over the conscious part of the brain. Eventually it wins.
Right. And women are much more sensitive to the compensatory engine compared to men.
Right.
A lot of women follow diets. They do lots of cardio. And I'm not just picking on women, but, you know, this is something that we see all the time. Both you and I hear it a lot. Well, I jogged 3 hours on the treadmill today and I'm dieting and I'm not eating any carbohydrates. I can't figure out why I'm binging on, well, chocolate chip cookies at night, you know, whatever it may be. And that is a result of this compensatory engine shifting into overdrive.
And it goes even further into overdrive in women who are over 40. And then once you hit menopause, forget about it. The compensatory engine goes into overdrive and you become more prone towards engorging yourself after a few days of cutting calories or working out excessively.
So to eliminate that as much as possible, we would want to change up an exercise program, right? We don't want to be doing types of exercises where that's going to trigger that firing up of that compensatory engine.
Right. We think, you know, this is what happens, Blythe. You know, you have somebody, let's say a young woman who's, you know, for you know, in their 20s, they were, you know, they didn't seem to have to do a lot, right, to keep their weight in a healthy range. And then all of a sudden, 40 rolls around and things change and they freak out. And when they freak out, what do? They just try to just start cutting calories, running on the treadmill more and more. And it probably does work in the beginning, but eventually what happens is the excess loss in calorie intake and the increase in calorie expenditure triggers these things to start working against them, and they can't understand why. Why was it so easy when I was 20 and it's so difficult now when I'm 40, or even worse when a woman goes into menopause and the hormones shift in such a dramatic way that this compensatory engine goes into overdrive.
Right. So do you want to keep going with that?
I think that's good. We can move into the next section.
Okay.
And that is this. Just because you're in a calorie deficit doesn't mean you're burning fat. I'm gonna let you take this one, Blythe, because I know how many women you've worked with over the years who come to you already in you know, huge calorie deficits and not losing weight. So explain what's going on there.
Yeah, and that's why I often talk on the podcast. You know, I know that you and I have different views and we work with people on different levels. But I always tell people to make sure that they're eating enough, because that's how often I see this. And it's usually women over 40 and they're eating somewhere between 800 and 1100 calories a day. And they're doing just as much exercise, maybe not as much as when they were 20, but they're doing a heck of a lot more than they were doing 6 months ago before they cut their calories. And they cannot figure out why they are. They just feel like they're burning the candle at both ends. And the reason is, okay, so what you said was, just because you're in a calorie deficit doesn't mean you're burning fat, but you're burning something, right? So if you're not burning fat, you have got to be burning something else. The glycogen that we store in our muscles, muscle tissue, there are other places that our body can take calories or get energy from. And I think of muscle as like premium fuel. So if your body got to stand at the gas pump and pick, shall I pick the low grade fat toxic stuff to put in my tank? Or should I pick the healthy lean muscle tissue to put in my tank? Your body's going to choose muscle. Our body does not want to burn fat. Your body wants to take that premium fuel and burn it. But our objective here is to do resistance training, interval training, things that are going to build strength that will eventually help you lose body fat. It's not just calories in versus calories out. There is a science behind this. And the older you get, the more important this becomes.
Right. So, you know, I loved how you put it. You know, you're just because you're in a calorie deficit doesn't mean you're burning fat, but you're burning something. Mm-hmm. And that something is usually the something that you want to keep on your body, not the something that you want to get off of your body. Right. And so there's, you know, we can basically encapsulate this into a very simple concept. And the concept is, if we're trying to basically starve away by cutting calories, starve away our fat by cutting calories dramatically, then the body's going to say, okay, well, this person's starving to death. Let's do what we can to slow down this process of starving to death.
Right.
Hopefully, we'll keep you alive long enough for the for food to be abundant again. Because starvation to the body, like the body has an innate intelligence. That innate intelligence is kind of the intelligence of a caveman. It's like, okay, no food's coming in. That can only mean one thing. There is no food to eat. Mm. Like, that's how the body or that's how the metabolism views dieting. It's not thinking that you would be, quote unquote, dumb enough to not eat food when food is available. Because when that happens, we don't know, what's going to happen when food is no longer available. So the body's like, okay, this person's starving to death. Let's slow that process down. Well, how do you slow it down? You slow it down by first, closing the doors to the fat cells. And then that sends signals to open the doors to the muscle cells. It burns the glycogen, burns the sugar. When you don't have enough of that left over, it starts making sugar by burning muscle. Because burning muscle, is a way to slow down the metabolism so that you can go for extended periods of time without food. Right. So that's what's happening. You're sending the body into an alarmed state. And so even though you're in a calorie deficit, it's not the fat that's being burned. It's the lean tissue in an effort to prevent you from starving to death.
Right. And one thing to piggyback on what I was talking about is when we've got higher cortisol levels in our body and lower estrogen, so like over the age of 40, the more energy comes from alternative sources, but those alternative sources are the glycogen and muscle that you just said. So that kind of just rephrases what I was saying about your body has to get the calories that you're burning from somewhere. So if you're cutting calories, it's likely that this is if you're someone who's currently cutting calories, this is something that you're going to want to take a look at before you hop into an exercise plan where you're trying to outrun your fork.
Right. And we can also look at the extreme cases of somebody who's anorexic. And one way in which anorexic patients ultimately die is through heart failure because the body has burned the muscle of the heart. That's how, you know, in an attempt to conserve whatever body fat remains on the body. And an anorexic can have high percentage body fats because of the fact that their muscle has eroded to such a significant degree. So the body will even eat the heart before it eats the last morsels of fat on your body. That's how this process can be so devastating to the body. And for the most part, you know, obviously, this podcast isn't about, you know, eating disorders and situations like that, but we can use that information to show and prove just how much this can happen in the body if conditions are not right for fat burning.
Right. It's a good example.
Okay. So, all right. So let's talk about the five female fat loss workout upgrades. So this is kind of putting it into action, putting this information into action. And let's start with number one.
Okay. Number one, fall in love with walking again. So we talked about this a little bit in our last podcast, but women burn more calories from fat from walking than men do. Women burn 79% of calories from fat compared to men's unimpressive 59%. So 20% more just with walking. This percentage drops a little bit as our estrogen levels drop as we get older, but the fact still remains the same that the female metabolism loves walking. And it does such a great job just outside of the calorie burn. I mean, we're talking, you know, leveling out your hormones, helping you relax. If you're in menopause or postmenopausal, even premenopausal, if you have issues sleeping, walking can help. I mean, there are so many areas of our life that walking can touch that it's fascinating.
And it's fallen out of vogue because we've lived in this concept that it's all about calories. And when it's all about calories, the exercise that burns the most calories looks like the exercise that burns the most fat. But we already talked about how just because you're burning calories doesn't mean those calories are coming from fat. And with walking, what makes it so powerful is, you talked about the fact that it improves hormone balance. And specifically, we're talking about cortisol, which as we get older, over the age of 40, because estrogen levels are no longer blunting the effects of cortisol, it becomes more important to keep cortisol levels down. And so walking helps to lower cortisol, especially when it's done in nature. Walking is restorative to the body. The body does not perceive walking as exercise. In fact, I don't call walking exercise. I call it activity.
Activity, yeah.
Because it's beneath the radar of the compensatory engine. Once the compensatory engine knows that you're burning lots of calories, you know, more than what would happen just in everyday living, it triggers itself. But with walking is something that we do all day, every day. And so the compensatory engine is not activated by walking. And that's what makes it such a powerful way to burn fat over other components of our body, right?
Right. Yeah, it helps with insulin sensitivity. It's an effective fat burning activity, and it's really, really beneficial if you can go for a walk after dinner. So after dinner and before you go to bed, it's a good idea to do that there. Same can't be said for like steady state cardio, like jogging, cycling, rowing, those things that are like repetitive and higher calorie burning, sure, but not the same when it comes to all of the great things it does for your body. And ding, 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 the golden nugget is not igniting that compensatory engine.
Right. And you can walk on a full stomach, right? Like you can have a full meal and go for a walk. Try doing that with steady state cardio. Cramping up, throwing up.
I think it feels good when you feel a little full. Maybe you ate a little much. It feels great to go on a walk.
It does. It really does. And maybe walking can become your dessert. Like if you're used to walk to eating dessert, maybe you swap that out for walking as your.
Are you trying to tell me something?
No. Do I need to be telling you something?
No. Just after the chocolate chip cookie episode, I don't know.
You'll get no judgment from this side of the mic from my debacle yesterday. But we joke about it because, you know, we try to keep it fun for ourselves so that we don't go into the other realm of guilt and shame. And you guys should be, you know, kind of listening to this, the fun that we have around this and have a little bit of that in your life as well. You know, make it lighthearted when these things happen and don't make it such a serious factor.
Yeah. we have enough negative self-talk that seeps in throughout the day. Let's leave it out when it comes to that stuff.
Amen. So yeah, so you talked about how 15 minutes of walking, even after dinner, can have a significant impact on insulin sensitivity. That's a wonderful result of it. It's true. It doesn't burn a lot of calories when you walk, but those calories are like your get out of jail free card, because it doesn't activate the capacity of your engine. So you're not going to be hungrier or have more cravings or feel the need to move less later in the day because of it. So that's what makes it so powerful.
Kind of a little special secret right there.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So female fat loss upgrade number two would be metabolic resistance training.
Yes. So number two, this is a very important number. Walking is always number one. Number two is resistance training, and metabolic resistance training specifically.
Yes. And we're going to talk about the other form. So there are basically two forms of resistance training. There's what we call conventional resistance training. That's if you walked into the gym and Blythe were there and she'd put you on a bench and have you do three sets, with 1 to 2 minute rest in between of a particular exercise, move to the next exercise. You do a set, you rest 1 to 2 minutes and then you
get your strength back, and then you go again.
So conventional resistance training, as we'll talk about, is really about strength. Metabolic resistance training, you basically do the same things, but you're removing the rest period, right? Or you're decreasing the rest period to below 60 seconds, and usually below 30 seconds.
Yeah. What I like to do when it comes to metabolic resistance training is I'll pick like three exercises. So I'll make it like a circuit. So if I plan on doing, let's just say triceps, I'll pick three different tricep exercises. Maybe I'll lay on the bench and do some tricep extensions with a dumbbell. I'll walk over to the cable and do some tricep pushdowns, and then I'll do some tricep dips on a bench. I'll take all three of those exercises, and the only break I get is, the 6 feet that I walk between one exercise or one station to the next, and you just go. And that's typically how I formulate a metabolic resistance training type of workout for myself.
Right. If you just remember one thing, remember that if you just remove the rest component, then you've got metabolic resistance training. Mm-hmm. And try to use big muscle groups and try to use multi-joint exercises when possible, because the more muscle groups you use, and the more joints that are involved in a particular exercise, the more muscle you're ultimately going to use. And the more muscle you use, the more of a hormonal response there is to the exercise. So generally speaking, metabolic resistance training workouts, like when you say dips, is a good example, because you're using more than just one muscle group when you're doing that.
Yeah, a triceps probably wasn't the best. I don't know why I even said that. That's what I plan to do at the gym later today.
The conventional resistance training is more like that, where you're focusing in on certain muscle groups like the chest, like the triceps, like the biceps, and so you're building specific muscles with conventional muscle, but the ultimate goal is strength and muscle growth with conventional resistance training. With metabolic resistance training, the primary goal is fat loss and shifting the hormones in a way that makes the body healthier, and the secondary goal is strength and muscle growth.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. All right, so that's metabolic resistance training, and that's the first thing that you want to implement when you're implementing a female fat loss workout plan, right? Because those workouts are generally much shorter. Mm-hmm. They're not burning tons of calories because they're shorter workouts,
but they burn calories for longer.
Right, the post workout burn is so much greater than it is with things like steady state cardio.
Right. So number three.
Yep.
Female fat loss workout upgrade number three is high intensity interval training. And this is one of those things that I think we can rehash just a little bit. So high intensity interval training is usually 30 minutes or less, even 20 minutes or less for some people, depending on how intense you can get. If you're just starting out, or if you're totally advanced, you need to be thinking, holy crap, I'm going to die during that sprint session. I mean, 30 seconds, you are giving it your all, and then you're going to cool down for a minute, minute and a half, sometimes 2 minutes if you really need to catch your breath. But you're going to go all out during that 30-second sprint. And I'm talking like you're going so hard, you don't know if you can keep it up for 30 seconds. That is true high-intensity interval training. And if you want the most bang for your buck, You got 20 minutes of that, or 25 minutes maybe with a warm up and a cool down. And you've got like 6 30-second sprints within that 25 minutes. And that will totally help with the hormonal benefits that you're looking to get from this type of exercise.
Right. And there are many ways to do high intensity interval training. You can do it on a treadmill. You can do it on a rower. You can do it on a bike, on a, you know, recumbent bike. You can do it on a track. You can do it in many different ways. On elliptical. Yeah.
Step so mill.
The whole idea of high intensity interval training is you go all out for very short periods of time, followed by longer periods of rest and recovery. So you don't want to, for example, sprint for 30 seconds and then jog for 1 to 2 minutes. It would be better for you to sprint for 30 seconds and so much so that you couldn't possibly jog for 2 minutes after. And instead you walk for that 1 to 2 minute period after the active phase of the high intensity interval training.
And if you have to pretend like I'm chasing you with a bow and arrow, go ahead. better
a sword, I think, because I think you can get them with the bow and arrow. How about Blythe chasing you with a sword or a stun gun of some sort?
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Okay.
So
I'm not
so,
that
yeah.
evil.
So yeah. That's high intensity interval training. The key takeaways here are when you go during your active phase, go hard. When you go during your recovery phase, go very, very light to recover so that when the active phase rolls around again, you can go full out, right?
Right. That's important for people to hear is that recovery time is not just a non-sprint. That recovery time is actually, we want your heart rate to come down. We want everything in the body to like, whew, everything's okay, so we can bring it back up again.
Right. And then number two, keep those workouts super short. They shouldn't go beyond 30 minutes. And for most part, it's going to be 20 minutes of actual high intensity interval training,
right,
not including the warm up and the cool down.
Right.
And I've seen, seen programs that go just up to 15 minutes, and it doesn't take a lot of time to get the hormonal reactions that we want that ultimately cause the body to really rev up the metabolism for a good 24 to 48 hour period after the workout, burn more energy, build more muscle, repair and recover the metabolism. It doesn't take a lot of time to get those benefits that last for that good 48 hour period after the workout finishes.
Right. So one of the arguments or one of the little kickbacks I usually get from suggesting this to my clients is, yeah, but I only burn like 111 calories while I was doing that. Where if I go to, treadmill class, they actually have treadmill classes where you're like jogging, sprinting, walking, doing all sorts of stuff for an hour, I burn 348 calories. It's not about the calorie burn, guys. We're talking about during that workout is what's being measured. But after that high intensity interval training workout, you're going to be experiencing that afterburn. So your body is burning the fat instead of just the sugar or the muscle tissue that you would be burning, if you were to go do treadmill class for an hour.
Right. And we got this all wrong back in the 90s and the early 2000s when we were talking exclusively about the fat burning zone. Really, think of how your metabolism works. Think of it like this. Your body will burn after the workout the opposite fuel that it burned during the workout. Okay?
Okay.
So if you go for an hour on a treadmill in your quote unquote fat burning zone, then for the next 48 hours, your body is going to not burn fat, it's going to burn sugar in order to replace the fat that was lost during the workout.
Okay,
and the same thing goes for high-intensity interval training and metabolic resistance training, because those are both really sugar-burning workouts. They're short and intense, so they're burning sugar primarily during the workout. And then after the workout, because the body wants to replenish the sugar that was lost during those workouts, it spends the next 48 hours burning fat while your body replenishes the glycogen in the muscles that was lost.
Right.
So that's how we should be thinking of our metabolism and how things, progress.
No, that's a great golden nugget. And if you have to rewind and re-listen to that part, do it.
Awesome. Okay, so let's move on to female fat loss workout plan upgrade number 4.
Lift weights like Arnold.
So Arnold Schwarzenegger we're referring to, which is what we would call conventional resistance training.
Yes.
And Blythe, what I see, you know, in women who are especially once, you know, let's say we have a woman who's, you know, been just, you know, doing treadmill work for the, you know, and they're now menopausal and things just aren't working like they used to. And they're not able to burn fat like they used to. And, you know, by that point that they reach menopause, resistance training, and specifically resistance training with the focus of rebuilding muscle, becomes even more important.
Mm, yes.
Because if you're not doing resistance training, whether it be metabolic resistance training or conventional resistance training, if you're not doing, let's say you're 30 years old and your entire workout plan is cardio.
Okay.
By the time you reach 60 years old, you're basically losing 5% of your muscle mass every decade. So you have 15% less muscle mass on your frame at 60 as you did when you were 30.
Right.
And so it becomes so important at the stage to replenish and rebuild that muscle that's been lost over the years. So most of us will want to incorporate conventional resistance training into the mix. And deciding and determining how much of your program should be metabolic resistance training, how much should be high intensity interval training, how much should be conventional resistance training really is tough to call. My experience is, in the beginning, if you're just starting out, do metabolic resistance training and high intensity interval training and tons of walking.
Okay.
As you become more and more fit, you can say, okay, well, let's do some conventional resistance training because that's a more effective way to continue to build muscle versus metabolic resistance training. Because my experience is metabolic resistance training will build muscle for a period of time. And then eventually your body will kind of plateau at how much muscle mass it's going to build based on metabolic resistance training because you fatigue sooner and you can't use the heavier weights. And then we can move into conventional resistance training with heavier weights to build more muscle mass.
Right. And one of the first things that any woman listening to this might be thinking or might have thought in the past, if you have already proved this theory wrong, they're afraid that they're going to start conventional weight training or even metabolic resistance training and wake up one morning looking like She-Ra.
Right.
And, you know, if you've never looked like She-Ra and you're 55 years old, you're never going to wake up looking like She-Ra. I'm just going to tell you right now that that's not going to happen. But that doesn't mean that you can't build strength. That doesn't mean that you can't build a little muscle in replacing some of that body fat. I shouldn't say replacing, but you'll lose some of the body fat and gain muscle. So you're not really going to be any bigger in size. But when you know, people say, well, I want to change the shape of my arms. I don't really like how flabby my arms are. That is done through weight training, whether it's metabolic resistance training to start or conventional weight training. The only type of exercise that can change the shape of your body is by adding or losing muscle. So if you want to change the frame isn't the right word because then people think bones, but if you want to change the shape of your body, muscle is what's going to change that. You can always be a larger version or a skinnier version of a less fat or more fat you, but your body shape is going to stay the same. So weight training is really where it's at when it comes to the whole aesthetically pleasing part that you have in there. You know, a lot of women complain about the back of their arms. Hey, how can I firm this up? Well, you have to do weight training.
You have to do weight training.
One
of the biggest, you know, one of the biggest letdowns is not that you will do all this work and not lose weight. The biggest letdown is that you will do all this work, lose weight, and then look in the mirror and feel no more confident in what you see than when you started.
Yeah.
Because you've gone from, you know, a large apple shape to a smaller apple shape. You know, you want to be able to, as you're burning fat, to be able to mold the body in a way that you want to mold it. You should, you want to feel and look toned at the end, especially if your ultimate goal is to look and feel more confident in your body. And and let's be honest, for a lot of us, that is our motivation. So if we get to the weight that we want to get to and we look in the mirror and we don't like what we see, you know, from the perspective of tone and shape, well, that's because we didn't put the work in the resistance training side of the equation in order to build the muscle mass that we've lost over the years.
Right. So then that would answer the question, you know, well, how much should I do high intensity interval training? How much should I do metabolic resistance training? How much should I do, you know, you can change that formula if you're not liking what you see in the mirror. And just keep right. in mind that the resistance training is what is going to help change the shape of your body.
Right. And there is one more, reason to choose conventional resistance training over metabolic resistance training. That is, if you're just starting out and your muscles have, and you've really lost a lot of muscle over the years, you know, that 5% per decade is what an average person who's eating a lot of calories throughout the day would lose. If you've been dieting, or you know, some of the worst metabolisms that I've seen when I've done resting metabolic rate testing on people is in marathoners, is in people whose hobby is running marathons. And it's because they've lost so much muscle mass because either they're dieting and running marathons, or they're just running so much that they're overwhelming whatever food they're taking in, and they're losing muscle mass. So you can lose muscle at a more aggressive rate than that 5% per decade if you're doing the wrong things from the perspective of diet and exercise. Right. And so, you know, it really, if you're really feeling weak and prone towards injuries, it may be better to start with conventional resistance training to strengthen those muscles before you jump into metabolic resistance training. You'll still get a lot of metabolic benefit from doing conventional resistance training, but you might need to tone up and strengthen the muscles to make those muscles more resilient and resistant to injury before you start doing some of the more intense metabolic resistance training.
Good point. Yeah.
All right, let's go to number five, which is, I think, one of your favorites.
Female fat loss workout plan upgrade number five, season to taste with cardio. So cardio actually is my least favorite subject to talk about, just because everybody loves it and I don't. So I always feel like I'm kind of the one defending my position on this. But
when you say everybody loves it, what do you mean by that?
Everybody uses it as the first tool they pick up for weight loss. Everybody. Okay, 99% of people. That is what they use to. Even people who have been listening to our podcast for years, they come to me and say, yeah, but I started, instead of running 3 miles, now I run 4 miles. And I'm like, but why are you doing cardio? Cardio isn't bad. Cardio is great for your cardiovascular system, but it is not the right formula for weight loss, for right. fat loss.
Now,
you will lose weight. Might be the wrong type of weight, though.
Okay. Now, you know, when we talk about how cardio is the redheaded stepchild of fat loss, because we do, and I'm sorry if you're a redhead and a stepchild listening to this podcast, I apologize, but it sometimes feels that way. Like we beat up on cardio and people feel like, okay, well, I guess I'll never do cardio again. And that's not what we're saying. We're saying, right. don't rely on cardio as your core fat loss or your foundational fat loss exercise plan. You season your, current exercise plan, which is filled with metabolic resistance training, conventional resistance training, high intensity interval training, and walking, you pepper in a little bit of cardio here and there to get an extra calorie burn in times when you want to speed up the process a little bit. Maybe you're losing sure. at such a slow rate, and adding one or two cardio sessions a week can speed that process up without activating the compensatory engine to the point where you start, you know, gorging yourself and having hot dog and honey bun episodes.
Are you doing cardio today later, Ray?
I'm not. Cardio for me is the jujitsu workout.
Yeah, and, no. That,
because I love it, yeah. I can't, you know, because I love it and that's my, you know, one of my core hobbies. You know, I would never say stop doing that in somebody right. who has a hobby that's active, like dancing, or, you know, if you like to go cycling, or you like to go rowing, or you like to do jiu-jitsu or karate or some sort of, you know, martial art. It's not that you have to stop doing those things. You just can't rely on that as your weight loss. And you have to take into account that after those workouts, you may be hungrier. Mm-hmm. And maybe we need to do things to preempt that. Maybe right. we need to say, okay, after you get done with your workout, maybe we have some carbs at that point in order to curtail and a hot dog and honey bun episode from happening, right?
Or how about if you know that every Wednesday evening you go to jiu-jitsu class, you have a bigger breakfast and a bigger lunch, and then maybe you won't, right, you'll curtail that feeling afterward that you need something more.
So let me, you know, because I spent so much time on this metaphor, let me give the metaphor for what cardio should, the way we should perceive and look at cardio.
Okay.
We think of cardio as like the pepper, right? The pepper,
yes,
of your workout
plan. The pepper to our dish.
Right.
If the so dish were our workout plan.
In some dishes, pepper is a welcome addition, right? It enhances the flavor of food. Mm-hmm. Like you might put pepper on a steak, for example, or salmon, or some other dish where pepper brings out new flair and flavor in the dish. And so it's the right seasoning for mm-hmm. the dish that we're talking about. In excess, however, pepper can ruin even a good thing, right?
Right, yeah. So pepper is there to enhance, right? Enhance the flavor, not cover up the flavor.
Right. So if we go back to how that relates to cardio, a little bit of cardio in the right workout plan, in somebody who has the right dietary, diet plan, can be a good addition. It can enhance the effects of the plan. But if you were to say, well, I'm just going to run every day in order to speed this up and run an hour or two a night, then that's like flooding pepper on a good thing. Like you have
and
a good...
I think that that's what we run into all the time, is that people just want to expedite the process. And I get that. You know, I want to expedite the process too. I want to expedite the process for all of my clients. But cardio isn't where it's at. But that's a good point. I don't think it's that I hate cardio. I did some cardio yesterday. Sometimes I just feel frisky and, you know, you want to do it. You just want to feel good because you feel great after doing a cardio type of workout. You know, sometimes you're frustrated or you've had a lot of stress and you know, jogging a mile can help you relieve some of that stress. Go for it. But when it comes to using that as something to expedite this whole journey of fat loss, that's the wrong approach.
Right. Think of it like pepper. Sprinkle a little bit into your workout. And like you say, if you feel like you want to go for a jog, go for a 30-minute jog. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it. You know, take it in. If that makes you feel better, then great. It probably is good for your lifestyle, good for your fat loss.
If it feels
if
good, yeah.
If you're forcing it, though, if you're saying, okay, I want to speed this up. I do not want to run on a treadmill, but I'm going to do it anyway. Well, that's a good sign that your body is fighting you on this.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I would, you know, if you're going to add the cardio in, maybe do 20 minutes to get a little bit of a calorie burn in there. But don't overdo it because you will activate the compensatory engine and it will reverse whatever calorie loss you get in the workout and then some.
Right. So a good time to sprinkle in some cardio after you've strengthened your muscles and you're doing high intensity interval training with consistency. Your diet's healthy. You've got sufficient calories coming in. You're getting healthy fats and lots of protein. Then is a good time to try and add in some cardio.
You can add in a cardio session once or twice a week. Let me put it this way. When your metabolism is healthy, when you're in a fat-burning metabolism, your body is wanting to release fat at this point because you've done the right things. You're eating, you know, plenty of food. You're not starving yourself. Your muscles are strong. Your mitochondria, which are the energy-producing plants of the body, are running on all cylinders. Then cardio becomes a good addition to your program in somewhat small amounts. If your body is if your metabolism is in a starved state and it's in a catabolic state where it's breaking down muscle, cardio is just going to speed up the process by which your body becomes weaker and more fatigued. And so it's not going to serve you in that place. So think of right plate, the right dish, pepper's good. The wrong dish, pepper's bad. And the more you add, the worse it's going to get.
That sounds good. Yeah. I think that's a great, great suggestion. And that is it for our five...
female fat loss workout plan upgrades.
Yes, our five upgrade plan upgrades. I love it. I think that was a great podcast. I think it's a great one to piggyback on top of the last episode, episode 110. This should be episode 111. And we got some great feedback from the last episode, episode 110. So guys, if you enjoyed this podcast, I would love for you to either find us on Facebook, Or you can go to our website, or you can send me an email, fitlifewithblythe@gmail.com. You can rate us on iTunes. We love reading our iTunes ratings. And give us some feedback. Hopefully it's good feedback. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this podcast. Hopefully you got some golden nuggets. Don't forget, we have our members area on
the Cut the Fat website. It's our the Cut the Fat fan club. Sign up for that, and you'll get announcements when we go live with our Cut the Fat challenge every 60 days. I will also point out that I am just completing a 3-part series on basically the ultimate guide to the female metabolism, and this podcast will basically be the seasoning to the part 2, which is the female focused workout program. And so if you go to our podcast website, cutthefatpodcast.com, click on the blog, you'll find the Mastering the Female Metabolism part 1, part 2, and part 3. And that will just go into much more detail about all of these things that we talked about in the last podcast and this podcast.
Yeah. Lots of good information there. I think a good handful of our listeners will be interested in doing that. So guys, if you like our podcast, feel free to share it with your friends and family. I know I've got a couple of emails just in the last week, right, of people saying I played you at one of our company parties. Like they had they were doing like a healthy eating thing, and the company was doing a weight loss challenge, and one of the girls was a podcast listener, so she played our podcast at the company party. I don't know, the company lunch or whatever it was. I thought that was pretty cool. Guys, feel free to share those things with us. We love it.
Yeah, that's great. All right, guys, we'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye.